So how about you? Any kids?
Oh, no, I just haven't had time, you know. I was running my own business and all.
Your own business?
Yeah. I invented Post-its.
No, really, what do you do?
That's what I do. I invented Post-its.
Hello, and welcome to another edition of the Subbeacon, sponsored by ExpressVPN. I'm Victor Manis, along with Sonny Bunch and Jonathan V. Last. I'd like to remind you the Subbeacon is available on iTunes and Google Play. Just look at a podcast and search for Subbeacon. You'll easily find us. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and leave a review. Gentlemen, how are we?
You, Victorino, stop!
What?
You are an amazing voice today.
I know! I just noticed it myself!
I was going to say,
I don't know, maybe it's the coffee.
Have you been taking lessons? Have you been holding out on us?
That was amazing!
It was weird. It might be the fish oil that I've been pumping into my mouth. Maybe it leaves some sort of residue that gives it some sort of mellow voice. I don't know. It's really weird. It's very, I know.
Have you been smoking cigarettes?
I should, if that works.
You've got to do the whole show by yourself.
Do some Lucky Strikes. Yes, sponsored by Lucky Strike.
Wow.
Yeah, that was weird. I just noticed that myself. I said, I'm just going to keep on going. I noticed you looking at me.
It was Sonny, right? Yes.
I agree. No, totally. Totally, I agree.
Wow. Okay.
If we could keep you just like this,
yeah,
it's not going to be like that. I could reach out to my buddy.
Good for 5,000 listeners.
My buddy at com.com.
Oh, I can be a read.
And I can ask her if perhaps you could read maybe the Alita sleep story.
There's some sleeping, but it comes at the end. JVL, what is going on with you?
Well, I am glad that everybody's here today for our very special Baselworld 2019 show.
It's happening.
We are going to do 3 hours on the new reveals going on right now in Switzerland. For instance, we have the new Zenith Pilot Type 20 Extra Special Silver. Amazing. Actually, kind of, you know, I was surprised. There's a new Zodiac Aerospace GMT Limited Edition, which normally I don't like Zodiacs. I think the Seawolf is sort of interesting, but it's a niche diver, not right. But man alive, the Citizen 001 hack, the super high accuracy quartz, normal quartz watches that you buy at Target are plus or minus 10 seconds per month. Mm-hmm. High accuracy quartzes are plus or minus 10 seconds per year. We have, through like the advances in thermocoupling technology, gotten them all the way to plus or minus 5 seconds per year, and then Citizen comes out and drops a bomb with a watch that is accurate to plus or minus 1 second per year. I mean, I have no problem paying $16,000 for a quartz watch, and I cannot wait to get one of these strapped to my wrist. Incredibly exciting.
Strapped to something. Sonny, you must have thoughts.
So, super. Guys, what is your favorite watch to be debuted at Baselworld this year, Victorino?
What happens when you change it to a different time zone and you get it off by a second?
Oh, no.
It doesn't work like that.
When you go to another time zone, does it just change automatically?
No, what you do is you take it and it just advances by full hours.
He's back. Does this watch require batteries?
I believe no. I believe it is EcoDrive technology.
That's the one where you move your wrist.
No,
that's
light. Oh. The EcoDrive is the Citizen branding for their solar watch.
Solar? It's
Sonny, what is your favorite watch so far from Baselworld 2019?
I haven't yet seen the Swatch collections.
Do you know why you haven't seen it?
Because they're waiting for the last day. It's the big reveal.
No, why are you trolling me like this? You know as well as I do that this year, for the first time ever, the Swatch Group has pulled out of Baselworld and now says they're never coming back.
They don't need Baselworld.
Why aren't they going back to Baselworld?
I don't know. It's like this total Swiss dick move. I don't get it.
I do love the Swatch.
There wasn't
with the
enough
dark
Gruyere cheese at the spread last year, and so the Swatch Group was like, we're going away. We're not going to come back here.
I do like the Swatch. I think you found it, Sonny, with the tinted face. You could barely see what time
it was.
Is.
It was black on black. You could barely see anything on it. It was the best watch I've ever seen. Honestly, if I could own any one watch, if you gave me carte blanche, you can own any watch in the world. You can choose any watch that you want, any brand, any model, whatever, you know, upgrades, I would go with the black on black watch.
Victorino, Rolex debuted yesterday.
I'm the sure new, they're good.
The new Grandmaster GMT2, the Batman watch, a totally new version of it that has, in fact, a Jubilee-style bracelet, much like your
Jubilee. I didn't know that's what it was.
That is a Jubilee-style bracelet, and that is unlike your Date Just.
Yeah, Date Just.
Like your Date Just.
Date Just.
And replacing the Oyster
Perpetual
bracelet.
Oyster Perpetual with.
That's the movement. Mm-hmm. The Oyster bracelet, which had been previously on the GMT Master. And it's the GMT Master, too, as you know, is the Batman. It has the bezel, which is both black and blue.
I did not know
and
that.
And I assume is one of you.
I did not know that. But I
we're not going to get a full 3 hours out of this bit, are we?
No, we're not. Sonny, what's going
on?
How
are you, Sonny?
I am fine.
What watch are you wearing today? What's on your wrist? Wrist check.
My Apple iPhone. My Apple iPhone.
Have you ever watched the watch video logs? Because every watch video log, no matter who the video logger is, like 30 seconds into it, they're like, oh, forgot have my wrist check. And they like pull out and they show the camera what they're wearing.
Why on earth would I ever watch one of those videos?
I don't even know what that
is. I don't even know what that is.
Okay. Personal pleasure.
I don't understand.
It helps you get to sleep.
For you. Sonny, what's going on?
Not much in my world. I just wanted to give a quick shout out to friend of the show, Travis Smith, whose book, Superhero Ethics, has hit paperback.
Yay.
It is available now at Amazon.com for the low, low price of $11.09.
It's a very excellent
Very,
book.
Very good nice. Price. Very fun book. Okay. Would make a nice gift for people if you're into, if you got a bunch of nerds in your house who like the mix of the highbrow and the lowbrow. I remember last year when we flogged this book, it briefly displaced Jordan Peterson at the top of the like social philosophy charts.
Oh, that's wow.
So that was,
you know what we do in this show?
We move product.
We move product.
Yeah.
So anyway, that was that's basically all that's going on
all right.
in my world.
All right.
Victorino.
Speaking of moving product, Sonny and I last week.
That's what I wanted to ask you about.
Let's just say I had a minor setback to my diet.
Well, you cashed in all of your coupons.
I cashed in.
Right.
Yeah,
60
for the year.
Coupons a month.
For the year.
60 drink coupons 60. A month.
Two drink max.
You should explain to people what you're talking about.
Okay. So on Friday, Sonny and I were invited to go to the Anheuser-Busch D.C. offices. Thanks to
For work.
Thanks to Subbeacon friend and listener Molly Drankert, who works over there. And
Molly Drank.
Molly, it's a great name, Drinkard. And it's a rooftop bar right there, you know, down on Pennsylvania Avenue. And they have, I mean, it's a full service. There's actually two bars, and they have a lot of glassware on the wall, which is you pick your glass depending on what beer you want to drink, you know.
Drinking glasses. Get a chalice.
That's exactly right. And a lot of different taps, and of course, everything that's not in tap. I mean, they have about, 500 brands or something. And so Sonny and I tried a bunch.
It was great.
It
was really great.
I counted.
How many coupons did you bring?
Well, let's see here. I think we sampled, Sonny, at least 8 different beers and ciders, right?
Yeah, at least. Yeah.
At least. So I took a note here of Goose Island Bourbon County Stout.
That was the best.
That was like
chocolate
milk.
That was the first
milk.
One. It was very much like drinking a hearty.
Are there any carbs in that?
I hope not. Elysian IPA. Wicked Weed, Green Line. By the way, by the time we got to Green Line, I thought it was Green Lime. And
yeah,
I said, I don't really taste the lime in this.
You drank it and you were like, this doesn't taste like lime at all. And I looked at you and I was like, how drunk are you already? When we were, finished the list.
Okay, Blue Point Toasted Lager, which I liked, Virtue Cider, right? And then, of course, Stella Artois. And there was a couple others.
Was it just you two unsupervised? Or
Molly was
there
with us.
Molly was there walking us through all the drinks. Well, I was treating it like a wine tasting. You know, you go to a wine tasting and you have like you have a sip of everything to get kind of a good sample of what's going on. I was also incredibly full because beforehand we had gone to Central
for lunch. For work.
Again, for work.
Yeah.
Boy, you guys just nose to the grindstone on Fridays.
We were putting in the hours.
It was hard.
Hours. So I was like kind of full anyway. So I didn't really want to drink like 8 beers. So I was having a sip of one and I put it down. And be like, okay, yeah, that's pretty good. That's interesting taste. Have sip of another. Like, oh, that's an interesting cider. And meanwhile, Vic, who is like getting kind of progressively slouchier.
You turn and he's like Barney.
He's like,
Simpsons.
Basically. So he is just putting down each glass, each 4 ounce pour full.
I hadn't had beer in a long time. And I did realize, by the way, by the end, my butt cheek actually hurt from leaning on the stool in one position for a long time. And I caught up and I'm like, why? What is this pain? And I had that lingering pain for a couple of days. I did. And also
from sitting, from slouching. From sitting and drinking.
Not from slouching.
Not from getting really drunk and blacking out.
From slouching. I did bang my knee on the bar, and I didn't want to make a scene, but that one hurt too. But, you know, it would have hurt a lot more if I didn't have those 8 beers. Drink responsibly, by the
way. Drink responsibly, everyone.
So, yes.
You Ubered home, did you not?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, JVL.
You always said that beer is not good for
That's
the le gout.
That's right. So far, dormant. Nothing.
No
happened.
Twinges.
Wasn't one of the beers a cherry?
There was a cherry beer.
I guess we're now
up to 10. But yes, there was. And I drank a bottled water. We had some water there, so that's good to sort of
was
like
Molly
neutralize.
Drinking with you?
A little bit.
Or was she just a Sherpa?
No.
She was like going up Everest. She's just there to help you get there safely.
No, she was with us.
She was with us. She was drinking. Yeah. I'd say I had a really good time, and I learned a lot. Strangely, I was not expecting to find out.
Tariffs are killing the beer industry. Aluminum.
There was definitely some politics talk. But like on top of that, I just had no idea how many craft breweries Anheuser-Busch has picked up over the years. I just loved hearing the stories about all of the different breweries. It was really interesting. I mean, it's not like it's a thing I can recommend people do because it's not like it's
you
open to the public.
Unless you have a Sub-Beacon
but
show.
But it is. It was a lot of fun. And I many thanks to Molly for bringing us over.
Question.
Yes.
Are they hiring?
I know. It's a small office too, and they all look so cool. They all look so cool up there.
I don't think any of us would fit in there. I don't think any of us is like.
But you talk about wine tasting, like how you treated this thing. You should see you at a wine tasting.
Well, I have seen you at a wine tasting, Vic. I've seen you at the Morton's Locker wine tasting
back in the day when they did that.
And your performance in both settings is about the same.
I once left my mark on the second floor garage of the office building once. Put it to you that way. Yes.
Do you still have your locker at Morton's?
Yes, they said people have told
people
me.
People should understand.
I haven't visited.
Victorino has not only his picture on the wall of the Palm.
Rob Rosamelia was just there.
But a private locker for his own wine and spirits.
That was a different time.
Morton's.
That was a different time.
There's
one bottle left.
You abandoned Morton's for the Palm.
I did. The
you
quality.
Abandoned your boy. I believe the people next to you were Tony Kornheiser and Michael Jordan.
Oh, you mean on the list? Yeah, yes. What was it? David Falk.
Yeah,
there.
I'm not
David
even
Falk.
Kidding. Like the list, there are all these famous, insanely rich people.
I don't know how.
And you.
Yeah, that's
the doctor's
right.
son.
Slipping my way.
How did you get into Georgetown again?
Yeah, tennis
sailing.
Team. I was on the
sailing team.
Yeah, that's right.
It didn't work out.
I'll tell you to go back to the. So that night, I got home, and then I had
Ubered home.
I Ubered home, and I had a serious.
You Ubered home after going to a happy hour at the Free Beacon.
Had to do.
There was a Free Beacon happy hour.
It was
for
a departing
employee.
Sunny, it was work.
It's work.
It was going away.
It's
it was still work
for morale. Team is very important.
Team is very important.
So I had to make an appearance.
Parting things for former employees.
I love our employees. They're wonderful. But I did have.
Didn't even go to the going away party.
I know
for you
didn't. I know. Believe me, it was noticed. I had a bad case of the hiccups when I got home, and that was kind of a scene when we're trying to gather in for family prayer night. You know, family prayer night.
Family
and
prayer night.
Not well. I mean, every night. But you know, it's like Our Father. Who are in heaven.
Why didn't you kick it off to one of the kids?
I know. Well, I was still.
Why
Michael.
Does daddy smell like
I know.
Pooch?
Well, believe me, that's happened and that didn't do well.
Daddy
this
smells
is literally
like
Andy Capp in the. It was, like coming home hiccuping because he's drunk.
Yeah, I'm hiding in the bar and then the wife comes in looking for me. Yeah, it's kind of like that. So that was a low point. But speaking of prayers, how about a Lenten update?
Lent Watch.
JVL, I thank you. Kate told me, Sonny, that you actually did add the Gregorian chant music to it.
Yeah,
thank you.
I put that
thoughtful.
At the bottom.
That was very nice.
You know, as a producer of many podcasts,
such a pro.
as a high class individual, I like to raise the
when
standards.
All this ends, you will have a job. I'm telling you right now.
Yeah, because nobody does any podcasting out there. There's a huge demand for people.
I mean, I just talk.
Who can do this?
I don't know
very
what you're
easy.
Pitching all these buttons. JVL, how are you holding up? No problems?
Great. Last night was tough. Watching this stupid movie at home with the vat of cheese like 4 feet away from me. I actually, for a little while, brought the vat of cheese out and I sat it because I watched the movie on my laptop, not on my phone. And I sat it next to me just to get like an extra half hour's worth of temptation. And
wow.
then I put it
well,
back
that's
in.
Good. It's like this. It's like flat.
Yeah,
it's,
that's
it's
right.
Self-flagellation.
I'm an opie.
So you have your Salise or whatever it is on your leg. Turn the screw there for the spikes. Sonny, remember how you said you didn't eat until like the next day, the next
yeah.
night?
Well, yeah, after the trip to Central, followed by the
beer fest,
the tour through the land of Budweiser craft brews, I did not eat for 24 hours.
Yes. And remember I told you I felt the same way?
Oh, yeah.
I lied.
Oh, okay,
so that
no.
night I was just kind of like looking at stuff to eat. You
Wait,
know?
You went. I'm sorry. You went on Friday.
Yes.
Did you get the fish at Central?
I did.
Oh,
no, I,
hey.
I had mussels. I had mussels.
Yeah, shellfish.
And,
great,
I had shellfish.
Great for guests.
Also, mussels and beer. Oh no. Okay. So then I was eating peanuts. I was eating nuts.
He was eating nuts at the bar. We're sitting at the bar. We're sitting at this Anheuser-Busch office bar, and I am like having trouble getting comfortable because I'm so full. From the restaurant and also from the beer we've been drinking. And I'm like kind of moving around like and Vic is just putting fistfuls of peanuts and beer
like
nuts in his mouth.
Who doesn't love beer nuts?
I mean,
man.
It was...
And it's so well, they're like salted nuts and they're perfect for match with beer. Beer
D's
and nuts. What?
D's nuts.
Oh, wow. Wow.
It's the Bofa
okay.
brand.
Yes. Okay. So then I got home and I started, you know, like whatever's in the fridge. Eating. But I didn't have a full dinner, but so I was just doing this. And then suddenly, the next thing you know, there's a slice of ham in my mouth on Friday night.
Well, it's after sundown. So
is that
okay?
So my question to you is, like,
there's a
wait,
Jesuit
you don't
somewhere
realize,
who
will
tell you
tell
it's
me,
after sundown.
I'm getting the absolution. But that's the question is, like, is that, what do you think? Is that really a sin if I didn't realize it until it's in my mouth?
Well it's can you go to the Easter Vigil Mass on the Saturday before?
Oh,
the count?
I have a feeling Father Harrison Ayer is going to have a different opinion about this.
This is ridiculous. If you get drunk and murder someone, it's still killing thy neighbor.
Yet again, Father Ayer is going to agree with Sonny.
It's not just him. It turns out we got a whole bunch of priests.
Sharapa? Father Sharapa? Does he listen?
And Father Conrad Murphy.
Wow.
And whom I had lunch with this week. I would say I'm slightly more nervous about working blue.
All right, fine.
I'm still going to do it.
Okay, no.
You did a whole thing about watch porn, literal watch porn.
I know, but you know
last
what?
Week, so last
will,
week, and then
I'll,
this week,
I'll,
you kept using, it's
I'm
like,
gonna, I'm gonna,
if people
I'll
are, if people
my,
are listening, if
sound.
People are listening to the episodes one after the other, they will be confused as to where one episode ends and
I'll
the next begins.
I guess when I go to confession, I'll mention it, but
I don't think it's a serious thing.
No, it's not like I went.
That's not a sin. Breaking Lent is not a mortal sin.
It's not like, oh, I, that's
it. Do you only have to confess the mortal sins?
Yeah.
No. Everything. I think knowingly, if I went to the Italian store.
Sorry. You do have to confess venal sins.
Yes, you
well.
Do. Venal and cardinal. But, if, you know, I mean, like, it's not like I knowingly said, I know it's Lent, but a Friday, I got to go to the
How
Italian
close was
store.
How close was it till midnight?
4 or 5 hours.
I can't remember.
I don't remember.
It
was Saturday somewhere. So, anyway, in my mind, I'm just going to say in my mind, it's a slice of ham. It's not like I went to the Italian store and got myself one of those delicious mouth-watering heroes. Speaking of sinking my teeth into a delicious mouth-watering hero.
Vic, over not worried about working
over,
blue.
Over the weekend, Captain Marvel, the most delicious hero of them all. Hero. You see that? Because it's like heroes versus subs, and it works because, you know, that's how they say it in New York. Over the weekend, Captain Marvel continued to dominate the box office with $69 million.
Nice.
It really is. Check out Box Office Mojo. Followed by Wonder Park, which sounds terrible, at $16 million. And in third place, 5 Feet Apart. With 13, I don't even know what that is. With $13 million,
it's one of those YA romance.
Oh, Oh, 5 feet, like a dance. It's that's like no, a it's dance like, reference. No,
I think they have that's like a cystic fibrosis or something, or some sort of communicable disease. Oh. I don't know. Point is, they have to be like they're tethered to each other, but also to keep each other. I don't understand.
Did you ever see the one?
I didn't even watch a trailer for this. Why would I watch a trailer?
Ever see the one about the boy? It's not the boy in the bubble, but he was in an isolation unit bubble because he couldn't get any of those. So he was separated by the plastic, and then he falls in.
The answer is moops.
Very good. Very good. So it's not that one, but it was a different one. And he falls in love with Tanya Katane. And then they do this whole, I think, where
Tanya Katane.
Do you ever see that one? Look it up. And like she presses herself against the plastic. And then I think they actually
the gloves?
Do. That's a lovely figure I'm looking at here. You should see this on Facebook Live. That's pretty good technique.
Yeah, you like that?
I like that. And
Father Air can't see that, can he?
He can't see it. But
it's like you've done that before.
But in the end, they finally do it. They finally do it in the end, and then he dies, I think. That's the story.
I hope it was worth it.
I didn't get that far. box office thoughts, Captain Marvel, what's happening here?
Sonny,
she's crushing
it. What sort of drop was that?
55%, which is about average.
That's normal.
It was on the high end of Marvel movies, like probably these movies tend to drop between 45% and 60%. I think Black Panther did 44%, something like that. So it's like slightly on the high end, but it's by no means a crash. It does not signal that the movie is soft or has really bad word of mouth. We'll see how
it. People love it.
Yeah. We'll see how it does this week because it will actually have some competition this week. I think Us is going to be the number one movie by a lot, but we'll see how it does. I mean, it's at over $800 million right now. Thursday morning, I still have the Tuesday totals on Box Office Mojo, but at some point yesterday, it went over $800 million. It will probably be over $900 million by the end of this weekend. It's headed toward that billion-dollar mark.
And yet the white male critics couldn't give it a break. I wonder why.
I mean, it's definitely the sexism. It is interesting to look at the Rotten Tomatoes scores because it has the Rotten Tomatoes number has been tracking not sharply down, but it's down to 79% fresh amongst all critics. And let me just look at the
how about among 62, white male critics?
62% fresh amongst top critics. So. So I mean, if you look at the Rotten Tomatoes numbers, it is in the bottom third of reviewed films. So I would say this is not a movie that has gotten a huge boost from the critical establishment. I think Marvel gamed the system by having a lot of, shall we say, nerd bloggers get early access to the film to flood the site. This is actually an experiment I would like to do at some point. Perhaps our friend Gabriel Rossman can help work out a little experiment here, but my theory on these films is that the Marvel doesn't buy critics, doesn't pay critics to give the movies good reviews. But I do think that these films in particular have a lot of reviewers from these kind of nerd sites who they fly out and give, you know, interviews and sneak previews and stuff. And I would be willing to bet that the numbers from those critics are sharply higher than the numbers from any other critics. And that those reviews also go up before the reviews that are, say, written by the people in Washington, D.C., New York, et cetera, to give a kind of an artificially high number and a cushion for when the real reviews come in. But I don't know exactly how you would structure that. I don't know what you would compare
that would
it to.
Be interesting.
Yeah. I don't know what you would compare it to. N.A. Solid A.
Okay. We're actually not talking about any of the movies that are at the box office, and certainly not the new movies that are out this weekend. It was one of those weekends. So instead, we decided to talk about a documentary on HBO called The Inventor. JVL, this was your idea. You suggested it. This is called The Inventor Out for Blood in Silicon Valley.
You know how good the title is? The title is so good that Vic literally couldn't remember it.
I'm looking for that. What was it called?
You got a documentary about a crazy woman who pretends to be an inventor, a company that people recognize the name of, Theranos, And they go with this ridiculous "The Inventor" title. I honestly don't know what it is. A symbol
there must
of
be legal conflicts everywhere because there are a bunch of projects in process.
Probably. I mean, they probably couldn't call it Bad Blood. I assume there is a Bad Blood documentary because there was a book. There was
The author is in this.
They should have called it Bad Blood. But the name of the movie is a symbol of everything that is wrong with the film qua film. As opposed to the subject matter, which is very interesting. But the film itself...
It's terrible, right?
Is not great. I wouldn't say it's terrible. It kept my attention for the 2 hours, but it could have easily been 30 minutes shorter.
45 minutes shorter.
It was a two-hour documentary.
It was a two-hour documentary. And so it was made by Alex Gibney, and it had kind of all of these like showy documentary quirks. Like, for instance, when they say... Somebody describes her as the Beethoven... Beethoven of Silicon Valley or something, or says she's like Beethoven or whatever. And then on screen we see Beethoven, and then Beethoven music starts playing, and then there's like, it's just like, okay,
it's
we don't
overly produce
this, overly way produced. Way mm-hmm. overproduced.
Yeah, and the silent film clips. He loves the silent film clips.
The dramatic recreations everywhere of like the lab tech who is. Up in her new office, and then her friends say, "Hey, there's that guy out there," and that is not actual footage. It's all dramatic recreations.
Right. The inside of the machine is not the inside of the machine. Yeah. As compelling as
inside,
it was,
the inside of the machine stuff actually I like to see because I like to get a sense of what they were actually.
But
trying
I know
to
it's
do with
not
those boxes.
It's his. It's, so anyway, it's Gibney's.
Should we say all right. what the movie is about?
Yeah, let's talk about it. Sonny or JVL?
Sonny, give us a big boy review.
The Inventor.
The simple fact of the matter is
The Inventor, Out for Blood in Silicon Valley, is a documentary about Elizabeth Holmes, the maestro behind Theranos, which as everyone remembers, it was a big scam. They said they could do, 200 tests from a drop of blood do it in 30 minutes or something. And it turns out all of this was lies. Lies and deception.
Lies.
Deception. And the documentary is about how this woman managed to fool all of these people. And it turns out the answer is she's like kind of crazy hot. Like not actually attractive. I don't think she's attractive at all, JVL. I know you disagree on this.
No, but I was trolling you last night. I can't believe you didn't understand.
Oh, no.
I thought you were being serious.
I thought you were being serious.
She's hideously unattractive. That is what is tied up in her self-worth.
No, but this is, I think, the point of one of the points of the film is that this woman was able to beguile a bunch of kind of older men who didn't really know anything about the industry or the business into giving her tons and tons of money because she has this kind of magnetic appeal. Yeah. Which again, I don't understand. She just looks crazy, and this is one of Alex Gibney's favorite things to do is just to have the camera on her and her crazy eyes, for large stretches, long stretches of time. So anyway, the movie's about how she scammed all these people and how the whole thing fell apart. It is at least 30 minutes too long, possibly 45 minutes too long. It is interesting in that the subject matter is interesting. But it is, again, it is really just paced horribly, and it has all these extra little bells and whistles that are unnecessary. But I do find it fascinating as yet another artifact of our current moment's decision to destroy our faith in every single institution that we have. The most damning part of the documentary to me was Jim Mattis.
Oh.
Jim Mattis, who was who was on the board of Theranos.
Yeah.
And he is interviewed by, the guy from The New Yorker? He's interviewed
Ken Auletta.
He was interviewed by Ken Auletta, and Ken Auletta says, what's the first thing that comes to mind when you think of Elizabeth Holmes? And without missing a beat, he says, integrity. Mm-hmm. Integrity, honesty. She, you know, she's a straight shooter. And it's just like, well, that's bad judge character there. And everybody who comes into contact with this woman seems to have a kind of bad read on her. And also, it just shows that Silicon Valley, or not Silicon Valley, that the investors behind Silicon Valley are all idiots, and none of them know what they're doing, and they're throwing money around without any real plan or sense of themselves, or sense of what the product's going to be, and it's a disaster. It's a giant disaster. It's just another. institution that is crumbling, and we're all going to die soon.
Free market God now, Sonny.
Hey, you know who wasn't?
I knew you were going to love this. I knew you were going to love that aspect.
You know who wasn't? You know who wasn't involved in this? Interestingly, who is in Silicon Valley and loves blood? Peter Thiel. Yeah. Peter Thiel saw that scam. He's like, I know a lot about blood. I know a lot about investing money. I'm staying away from this lady. She's nuts.
Yeah. No. That's very true. It's like they had. I mean, but these.
I should probably look up to see if he invested.
You better check that out, so I think we could edit that out. But it is. I mean, they have enough money, right, in the billions that they can just throw on the wall, and then whatever sticks. Hey, I happen to have money in Uber or Pandora or whatever, and that might work out, or Lyft, and then the other ones don't. Okay, so big deal. But that's what happened, and she took part in that. JVL, I was really interested in wanting to know your take on, from your medical background, right? You could have worked there. You could have technically worked there with your understanding of science, your background in molecular biology, and your ability to process things and write and everything else.
I will just say there's a Vanity Fair story here noting that you couldn't find Michael Moritz, John Doerr, or Peter Thiel on the Theranos board.
Good call.
While Mark Anderson has repeatedly come to her defense, his firm
Mark
did
Andreessen?
Not invest in... Yeah, Mark Andreessen. Yeah.
Ooh.
But he did not invest. His firm did not invest. And apparently, like, they went to all of the big VC companies and were like, hey, give us money. And none of them were into it. So, I mean, like, she raised money from people like Rupert Murdoch and from people like George Shultz. Like, people who don't actually understand, you know, the world of Silicon Valley. People who were just looking to get in and were kind of suckered, were hoodwinked.
So, I mean, do we want to talk about the film or Theranos and the problems with her? Culture first.
No, you have enough time for everything.
We could talk about both. We got some time here.
We do.
I mean, the
JVL.
I think the film is a mess.
Yeah, agreed.
And it is a mess for not just because it's poorly paced, although it is poorly paced. Not just because it includes all sorts of extraneous stuff, which it does. Like, we don't need. There's tons and tons of like old time footage from Thomas Edison.
The old time footage. He's fixated with.
We
that.
Don't need any of that.
Yeah.
And it's a mess in ways that...
There's footage of Thomas Edison because the machine is called the Edison. Like, it's this tangential, totally unnecessary and uninteresting.
It's worse than that. So the first third of the film talks deeply about Edison and fixes on the idea of all great inventors are essentially frauds until they're not.
Right.
Like, and it begins by alibying her or constructing for what she would claim as an alibi. And then in the final third of the movie, it turns away from that and basically says, hey, this woman's a psychopath.
Right.
So if we know she's a psychopath, why are you constructing a false alibi in the first place? It's crazy.
I got the sense that they're suggesting had federal authorities and regulators, clamped down on Thomas Edison before he actually developed the incandescent light bulb, then he would be looked on as a fraud because he was giving stock away to people and journalists.
That's what they're saying, you know, these guys are all piratical. They are all making claims that are fantastical. Everybody says to Steve Jobs, you can't do that. And then eventually Steve Jobs does that.
Fake it till you make it. Fake it till you make it.
If you don't dream big, then nobody ever accomplishes anything. All of which is, again, is the Holmes alibi. Mm-hmm. And at the end, they're like, accept that this woman's a psychopath. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That thematically, these two things shouldn't be there unless you're going to explore the tension between them, and they don't do that.
I heard. Well, I think that we are supposed to be led to believe that this tension is false to begin with. That yes, there may be like there's a Steve Jobs, but there's a reason everybody says Steve Jobs and not Steve Jobs and these other people.
But it isn't even about the person. I mean, it is about what the idea is. So if you were to go to Silicon Valley and say, I want to take the Palm Pilot and further the miniaturization and then attach it to a cellular network, what you are saying is, you are saying, I want to take basically existing technology and adapt it in a new and advanced way to create a new product. That is the iPhone, right? And maybe people think this is a good idea or a bad idea, but it is an idea that is achievable. You are proposing a technological advance. What Theranos proposed was a violation of the laws of physics.
That's right. That's right.
And there is a difference. And the inability of people to pass judgments mm-hmm. upon what is a difference between somebody offering a technological advance and vision and somebody who is offering a fraud. And this is what they were doing is no different than saying, hey, guess what? We have a new app and it's going to allow you to create new energy in the universe.
Right. Just give us more time.
Yeah. And nobody says, yeah, okay, well, great, so the problem is that's the first law of thermodynamics and you can't break it.
Our great
dipshit.
We got it. We got a great new app. You take your old books, throw them in a fire, wave the app over it, gold. Just get some gold.
So that bothered me. And it really bothered me that Gibney had access. It isn't a problem of access. So he doesn't have access to Holmes or Sonny, but he has access.
Sonny, who is the president of
Holmes' is
Sonny with
lover.
A U. Holmes, Barwani.
Sonny with a U, not Sonny with an O. Don't right. trust those. Any male Sonny with a U, not to be trusted.
But she has access to Tyler Schultz, who is the key whistleblower in this entire thing. She has access to Ken Auletta and the guy from Fortune, the guy Roger Parloff.
Yeah, the guy who wrote the cover story for Fortune. Yeah.
And to John Carreyrou, which is, I think, honestly, very big of John Carreyrou, yeah. who I believe has sold the movie rights for Bad Blood to somebody else to do a
movie?
Big screen version of it. Very, very gracious of him to sit for this. And then doesn't sort of connect any of the dots or tell the story in a deep and interesting way. I mean, it's just, this fails in every way as a documentary. And the subject itself is fascinating.
Yeah,
that we can all talk about it
right.
because the subject of Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos and what it means about us and our culture and capitalism and all this stuff is inherently interesting. But my God, this movie just blows.
Yeah, right. But I still found it compelling because I didn't know that much. I mean, I knew about Theranos, but I didn't know all the details. And so, you know, it's that big of a story that you can even mess up this, you know, this documentary and still, you know, watch the whole thing for the next 2 hours because, you know, just again, just looking at her, I'm sort of just glued to that. And of course, and some of the things that you guys already touched on, something you talked about, you know, the charming of these old men, and it's just not Mattis, right? I mean, it's Kissinger, you know, and it's Schultz,
Bill Clinton,
Perry, Sam Nunn.
There's tons of it. Can I ask you guys a journalism
and
question?
Biden. Yeah.
What are your feelings on Roger Parloff, the Fortune guy, versus Ken Auletta?
Because I love this. Yeah,
both these guys are tasked with writing giant profiles of her. Both of them have incentives. Their incentive is to look the other way on anything they find that doesn't look right. I mean, they are there to write puff pieces about Theranos.
This is what you
and
do.
At the time they were writing them, nobody would have published a Emperor Has No Clothes thing.
I don't know that the New Yorker is necessarily there to do that. In his
Ken Auletta's bag is being an interlocutor to big, famous Silicon Valley people.
Yeah.
And if he cuts somebody's throat, he's going to lose future access.
Okay.
And I love Ken Auletta.
Yeah.
But the difference between them
is actually one of my favorite New Yorker journalists.
I love him.
Sure.
Ken Auletta seems to not have been suckered. He seems to have known that something wasn't right, and Parloff seems to have been genuinely had the wool pulled over his eyes.
Yes, 100%.
What did you think of their reactions? Because they're very different.
First off, I thought Ken Auletta looked exactly like I imagined Ken Auletta would look.
Yes,
with
totally.
With kind of the shawl collar.
I love that sweater.
Yeah,
he's got the shawl collar sweater,
and he's like in his own library,
so
I assume.
Refined, the hair, everything is
he
just,
looks. He looks like an old school, like mainline wasp.
Yes,
it's fantastic. Yeah. So Ken Auletta met all of my expectations just right off the bat, just through his appearance. But what was interesting was if you go back and read that New Yorker piece, which I kind of flipped through after watching it, he makes it very clear that the thing that they are doing is not explained to him in any detail or any way. And it's interesting to listen to the interviews as he's conducting them because he has all the tapes and we hear all of these on the record conversations and the points where they go off the record where, you know, he says, where she says something like, oh, I can't talk about that on the record. We're dealing with the FDA, whatever. He struck me as somebody who was... what's interesting is the difference between his reaction, which was kind of like, yeah, okay, I can see this being BS. I can see this being BS. And the other guy's... Parloff's reaction, who is... angry.
Yeah.
Who's like angry and like almost near tears at one point because I think he understands that his career could be seriously damaged by this.
Yes.
Right.
He believes he fell down on the job, and he is angry about it, and he goes out and tries to correct the record, yeah. where Aletta, who seems to have basically known better, just kind of shrugs and is like, yeah, the world's weird.
But there's a difference between the two stories that they're doing. Like, if you go back and read that piece again, it is not a triumphal piece.
No, but I mean, it's pretty clear to me that when you read, I mean, the almost, what does he say? He says her description of the science is almost comically vague.
Yes.
Yeah. Which is as close as you can come to saying.
This is, this is a bunch of BS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But he wasn't willing to like really pull the trigger on it.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And after the fact, doesn't seem to feel any real responsibility for not having pulled the trigger.
Well,
on.
I mean, this is, I don't know. It's a difference between the New Yorker and Fortune, right? Is that I feel like the New Yorker
Forbes. Is it Forbes?
I believe it was Fortune.
It was okay. Fortune.
Fortune.
It was the New Yorker is telling stories, and this is an interesting story. Mm-hmm. And Fortune is supposed to be chronicling great investments and great advances, and here are the heroes of capitalism. And when it turns out that these people are frauds, they look bad. Fortune looks bad. I don't think anybody thinks. Do you think less of the New Yorker or Ken Aletta after reading it and seeing him? I don't.
I think a tiny bit less of Ken Aletta for not being angry about being had. Yeah. I love Ken Aletta. Don't get me wrong. Again, he's one of my favorite New Yorkers. He's not my favorite New Yorker. My favorite New Yorker writer is David Gran. But Ken Aletta's high on the list.
Speaking of, I mean, like I said, Ken Aletta looks like kind of an old school wasp. Do you think that he is the sort of person who would show on film that he is furious?
I've been had.
I would expect him to write about it. I mean, so here, can I give you a David Gran parallel?
Sure.
So David Gran, 10 years ago, started out doing a story about this guy who had created a new process for the verification of lost pieces of art. So you bring in this painting and we think it might be a Monet, and he had a new process of verifying how it was. And so the story began as a profile of this guy. And over the course of like a year and a half, midway, 18 months into reporting it, he thinks to himself, I think this guy is a fraud. And so the piece instead becomes a true crime piece. And by the end of it, but by the time David Gran files the piece, the guy's been arrested by Interpol.
Mm-hmm.
And so it becomes an art theft, an art forgery piece. That is sort of what I expect. Mm-hmm. And if you don't do that, if you're the guy like what Ken Aletta did, and it is one thing to be had, at which point, shame on you for not being tough enough and for being snowed. Mm-hmm. But to have an inkling of it and then be like, yeah. That makes me think like 3% less of Ken Aletta. Yeah. Victorino, did you know?
Yeah, I was fascinated by three different journalists and how they approached Theranos. And so, I mean, the one is Parloff, and he does the cover story, and then she claims that she didn't know it was a cover story, but it's obvious. I mean, they did a huge photo shoot of that.
That's one of the most amazing things, right?
And that kind of it's easy to do the piece. They will provide you all the information. They'll tell you everything you want to hear. It'll make you look great. I mean, it's an easy thing to do.
We know this. We know this.
And then Ken Aletta's piece, which was a little bit more probing, obviously. And then Carrie Yu. You know, he's the one who, I guess he sees the red flag.
But Carrie Yu also starts with whistleblowers.
Yeah.
Yes. Carrie Yu's entree into the story is, I have worked for Theranos. They are lying to everyone. Here is what they're lying about. And I think having that as your starting point
gives you an edge.
Mm-hmm. Makes it
it's very different. Like,
yeah. But what was fascinating in the documentary is to, after it comes out that this whole thing is fraud, and you know, Carrie's piece comes out in the journal, going back, revisiting the journalists and their reactions. And that's what, and I agree with Sonny and you about Parloff was, he was genuinely mortified, I think. And it's something that we, as journalists, you know, you don't want to have that happen where you were used. And then how do you react to that? And
there's a
It's a scary thing.
There's a fourth journalist in this movie.
Is it Alex Gibney?
Oh. No. Jim Cramer.
Oh yeah!
Oh,
and so after the Carrie Yu piece,
he
has a host on
TV
a news show in which he interviews newsmakers. There is no way in which he is not. He's a broadcast journalist.
And
after the Wall Street Journal piece comes out, he has Elizabeth Holmes on Mad Money,
mm-hmm.
And he prefaces the interview by saying, there are two sides to every story. Elizabeth
Holmes.
That's right.
They benched
and
that
she
part.
Comes yeah. on and she trashes the journal and she says, this is all lies mm-hmm. and we're going to mm-hmm. fight it. And Jim Cramer accepts it all with total, just okay.
More fascinating was her appearance at a Wall Street Journal event.
Oh. Yes.
I remember in real time when that happened.
Where she just starts, she says, your reporters are liars. This is all wrong. He's saying things that didn't happen. We're not doing this. We're doing that. And I was, okay.
That's the strategy.
She's a straight up, I mean, she's a crazed sociopath. Right.
So she is a psychopath.
Yeah.
The legal aspects of this are also compelling and terrifying. I mean, when Carrie Yu has questions, and they're, of course, all paranoid. Then, you know, not only, I guess, does she show up to the journal offices, but she's armed with, you know, a bunch of lawyers, including David Boies.
Heather King.
And listening to the interview, and because it's all recorded. They take out the recorders, so he takes out their recorders, and threatening the Wall Street Journal. And, you know, I mean, this is the...
David Boies, that scumbag.
David Boies and Heather King are straight up whores.
Yeah.
David Boies is always going to be David Boies. Heather King ought to never get another job for the rest of her life.
She was Hillary Clinton's?
She was a Clinton counsel? Person yeah. who... This is the one thing that I would say that is striking about all of this is that at no point did anybody associated with Theranos ever actually believe that what the company said they were doing was even theoretically possible.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't the case of, well, we were all... everything was compartmentalized. Everything was secret. Yeah. The entire thing, top to bottom, was fraud.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Just out and out fraud.
It's like the Iraqi nuclear scientists who are kept from talking to the other scientists about how far are we developing things. So they don't know. And so they kept them talking about the upstairs and the downstairs, basically,
it's really
of Theranos.
It's really bad. Mm-hmm. This is the Silicon Valley Fire Festival.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's right. There are comparisons. There are parallels.
Both if you could fire only one of them into the sun, would it be Elizabeth Holmes or Billy McFarland?
Oh.
I think Billy
you
McFarland.
You have a catapult.
Billy
it's
McFarlane.
A one-time use only catapult.
Yeah.
Billy now, let me prejudice you. Have you been reading the Nick Bilton Vanity Fair post-Theranos breakup of
Sonny and Elizabeth?
Because Elizabeth now walks around as if Theranos is still a going concern and nothing has happened. She was also, embezzling is too strong a word, she was also using company money to fund a lavish lifestyle while she was there. She acted this idea that...
Wasn't that the whole point of founding a Silicon Valley
Well, no, startup? But she says to the journalist...
That's why we started the Free Beacon.
I am here for... 22 hours a day. I sleep in my office. Actually, she had this giant mansion that Theranos was paying for. You notice, one of the things you notice is that she never opens a door in every single shot.
Yeah.
There is somebody always opening the doors for her.
Well,
and
except
she
for
has
like
this
like the morning
team
scene.
Of security. Yeah. No, in the morning. Somebody is waiting to open the door for them.
None of this.
They have a team of an advanced team and
security. She's 30.
People.
None of, she was 30.
Yeah, but none of this strikes me as terrible as when Billy McFarlane, after destroying the Fire Festival and, you know, bilking all those people out of money, then starts trying to sell people tickets to events that don't exist.
Right. The Met Gala.
She has a dog, which she brings everywhere with her, which she insists is a wolf.
It's not a wolf.
It's not a wolf.
Are we sure it's not a wolf?
We're
a dire wolf?
Sure it's
not
a wolf.
It's a dire wolf from Game of Thrones, right.
So you have a catapult that can only work once. It can only fit one human being on it.
I still
can
think
fire them into the sun.
Yeah, I'm with Sonny on this.
Really?
Yeah, but I mean, that said, I mean, it's horrifying. I think one of the things that
Billy McFarlane didn't actually kill anybody.
Elizabeth
Holmes did.
If I had to listen,
one of her scientists committed
drank himself
suicide.
To death. Yeah,
because of the pressure he was under legally because she was trying to muzzle him.
Yeah. If I had to listen to Elizabeth Holmes,
what are you talking
for
about?
Any? She sounds like Romy.
What
from Romy and Michelle? High school reunion.
Don't ever want anybody to have to say goodbye to their uncle ever again.
What greater mission is
the
this?
Way I do. We are changing the world here.
You sound like Benicio del Toro in Sin City.
It's actually like that, J-Vo, but her voice is actually lower than that. There are two horrifying things that stand out to me from the story here. One is the lab tech guy talking about having to reach into the machine, the Edison. to fix something. There's blood spatter of everybody's blood inside.
And needles and broken
and
glass.
And needles, and you're going to get hep. You're going to get pricked, and you're going to get hep.
So to speak.
And then the other thing was Tyler Schultz's, you know, talking about, you know, how these he had to, his family had to lawyer up. They were going to take, what, a second mortgage on the house. It was like $400,000 or $500,000 in legal fees, even though they're in the right against these lawyers who show up to his grandfather's house.
So did you read? So Carrie, you wrote a long piece just about Tyler Schultz in the end, and this kid is just what time is it, Sonny?
53 seconds.
This kid is a fucking bad, and he deserves some sort of medal. So here he is, and you think, okay, this is the child of privilege. His grandfather is George Schultz. Right. His parents are super wealthy, et cetera. He meets Elizabeth Holmes. He goes to work there. And he sees that things are really, really bad. And he knows that he signed an NDA. But he decides to go and talk to a reporter anyway because he thinks that somebody has to know about this. Holmes turns his own grandfather against him.
Yeah.
And his grandfather, this very powerful man who the kid reveres, he starts, you know, he lures him to his house where there are lawyers waiting for him. He applies all sorts of pressure tactics to get him to disclaim whatever he's told Carrieu and insist that they were all lies in order to avoid being sued. His parents go in the hall for $400,000 or $500,000 in legal fees.
That's right.
And then in the end, he is eager to forgive and reconcile with his grandfather.
Yeah.
What a great guy.
Good kid.
Do
Good
they
egg.
Make millennials like that?
Yeah, I mean, no, I'm no not I think it's kid. Just like, him.
Is he a zoomer?
No, he's...
That kid
he's
is
either,
really,
he's either at the end of the millennials
he's
or
probably
the
end of millennials.
Of
yeah.
That, you know what? Those are balls the size of church bells. I mean, would it... I'm sorry. If a family member did that to me, they'd be dead to me for the rest of my life. And
you?
This kid
really?
I find it hard to believe you would hold a grudge like that, JVL. Come on.
And this kid is so... I mean, just what a great human being.
Yeah.
Totally agree.
He seems very approachable and very...
If we were going to rank the five worst human beings...
This movie. This is a JVL fixation. I can't think that quick. Oh, okay. Well, there's certainly...
Number one is Elizabeth Holmes. Number two is
Sonny.
I don't know who's after that.
I actually went in a different direction with my ranking.
Okay.
Number five, Jim Cramer.
Okay.
Number four, Elizabeth Holmes. Because
there's three people ahead of Elizabeth Holmes?
I don't think Elizabeth Holmes has any choice in all of this. I think she is a sociopath.
Oh.
She is no more...
That doesn't make her a better person.
No, but it makes her like
that doesn't
an animal.
Reduce, that doesn't reduce her culpability.
Number three, Charles Manson.
I would say somebody who is a pure sociopath is less morally reprehensible than somebody who knows better and makes those choices volitionally. And I believe our priests who listen to the show will back me up on that. Number three, Sonny. Sonny knows better, and Sonny is a bully. Sonny was the legal enforcer who was always hiring security and looking. Sonny knew what they were doing as a fraud and thought that they would be able to skate by bullying people and just get away with it forever. Number two, Heather King, the Clinton team lawyer who went on staff as a general, at least Boies was just like an outside counsel. She was on staff as general counsel. She was, I'm sure, taking all sorts of ownership stakes and stock options.
She knows a lot.
You see her in the videos from the Theranos town hall cheerleading and dancing while they're playing. What's the LL?
Don't touch me.
Don't touch me. Her 45-year-old white lady dance. And then she goes and tries to bully John Carrieu and tell him that he doesn't know what's what. Mm-hmm. So she is either the biggest fool or the biggest liar, and she should never work again. And number one, the most despicable person is David Boies. Because
he's the worst.
He has an actual outside reputation independent of all of this. He doesn't need the money. He didn't need any of this crap. He's a respected lawyer who has argued in front of the Supreme Court. And it turns out he is a shyster.
He set his
entire life on fire by being involved with this.
He went from Theranos to Weinstein, right?
Yes.
To Harvey?
Yes, he did.
It was also wholly unsatisfying in the end when it's just a throwaway line about, and even David Bowie's resigned from the board. And I'm like, can't we get him on camera saying, so what's your reaction to all this? Do you still stand by this and the threatening of these people? And is he going to say, well, you know, with the information I had no idea or what? That's
sure
what I want more of that.
I'm sure there's privilege there. It's that's attorney client stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I was also fascinated by the pep talks, and you see this in
it's a very Silicon Valley.
Very yes. Silicon Valley, also Wolf of Wall Street, and it's something that we only see here at the Beacon during the holiday party with Aaron Harrison.
Yeah.
But it's really
gotta delete all those videos.
Yes.
Fascinating.
It's real.
My one big Silicon Valley takeaway from all this is that when Silicon Valley tries to do things outside of its purview, when it tries to do things outside of software engineering and like phones and computers, when it tries to build something, it invariably screws it up. So you have this Edison thing, but also self-driving cars, other you know, kind of tech Tesla.
Tesla's doing great.
Tesla's a disaster.
Oh, Tesla's a disaster.
No, I don't actually think it's a disaster. I'm just saying what JVL thinks.
It can't be a disaster. They're all over Arlington.
Do you think this is a correct takeaway, or am I overreaching here? Am I leaving out the noted successes?
This is a Peter Thiel obsession, which is that Silicon Valley is much better at bits than they are at atoms. And that ultimately the bits are of very little value. We talked about very, very early in the show. We talked about how they just throw a bunch of money at the wall and so they see what sticks. And every once in a while, you get a Facebook.
Yeah.
What does Facebook actually give you? I mean, what is the value add to the economy of Facebook? And the answer is there isn't really. Mm. If Facebook were to, like, if we had a magic wand and we made Facebook disappear today, yes, nothing would change in the economy. Tomorrow, all the advertising dollars will just shift back to something, other platform, to TV broadcast or something like this. No, right? Nobody, everybody would move to some other platform to communicate. There's no thing there that people use. There's no hole in the economy that there would be if you say waved a wand and made UPS disappear. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, these are companies mm-hmm. which do actual mm-hmm. real things in the mm-hmm. real world, and this is the mm-hmm. original sin of Silicon Valley. This is decadent decline capitalism, where we have moved away from capital allocation for useful industry into a casino that is run by finance, creating goods that are of absolutely no value except to a decadent late-stage democracy. Bam! Mic drop. Welcome to Chapo Trap House.
I was going to say, that was very manifesto-ish. Okay. Two final thoughts.
Bernie 2020!
Right, thank you. I'm pretty sure, by the way, my blood test results were run through an Edison. I think that's what happened.
So really, everything's fine.
Yeah, no, it's really... They switched the blood samples with Joey Chestnut, the guy from the hot dog eating king. I think that's what happened. Also, our friend Dan Halper was telling me the other day, a friend of his was, you know, Elizabeth Holmes grew up in the area, and a friend of his was in DuPont Circle, and spotted a woman. This looks like Elizabeth Holmes, and she's walking towards him. So he actually stops and stares at her, like, "Is that really her?" Because he had seen the documentary. And as soon as she walks by, she passes. She looks at him. They make eye contact, and she just goes, "Yep," and just keeps on walking.
Yep.
Yeah, that's what she said. Yep. Okay. Do we have? Who plays her in the movie?
I'll effort that.
I give you two. Oh, I was going to say I'll give you two options: Jennifer Lawrence or Naomi Watts. There you go.
You're just looking at the hair.
With her house of bugging eyes.
You're just looking at the hair. I mean, the voice. Mira Sorvino. See what it needs to be. Romy.
She has a... Oh, yeah, oh, that's right. That was
Romy. Romy's whole rant about...
Adam McKay. And Jennifer Lawrence is playing her.
Oh, so it was Jennifer Lawrence.
Adam McKay is directing.
All right.
That's going to be terrible.
Do you have any other Theranos thoughts? No? We're good? Okay. The only thing I thought of was that, you know, when Tyler Schultz had to get the burner phone, the other thing, he could have emailed them if he had his own virtual private network. That's right. Admit it. You think that cybercrime is something that happens to other people who work at Theranos. You may think that no one wants your data or that hackers can't grab your passwords or credit card details, but you'd be wrong. Stealing data from unsuspecting people on public Wi-Fi is one of the simplest and cheapest ways for hackers to make money. When you leave your internet connection unencrypted, you might as well be writing your passwords and credit card numbers on a huge billboard for the rest of the world to see. That's why I decided to take action to protect myself from cyber criminals. I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes your internet browsing by encrypting your data and hiding your public IP address. ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click. Using ExpressVPN, I can safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or having my personal data stolen. For less than $7 a month, you can get the same ExpressVPN protection that I have. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar and comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/WFB. That's expressvpn.com/WFB for 3 months free with a 1-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/WFB to learn more. Do we have any other corrections and additions? Shout outs. I have a shout out.
Yeah.
Yes. So a special shout out to Subbeacon listener Kevin Nichols, who spotted me at the Knights of Columbus St. Patrick's Day breakfast buffet. I was on my way to either
part of the RG diet. The St. Patrick's Day breakfast buffet.
He actually asked me about that, and I was either on my second or seventh plate. I can't remember. And I hear somebody call my name. I turn around, and this really friendly guy comes up to me, and he says, "I'm sure it's fine." And I said, "What?" And then he told me he's just a big fan of the show, loves you guys. He was there with his adorable kids. He did ask me about the RG diet, and I said yes, because they had a fried chicken and waffle station, and I just had fried chicken with the maple syrup. See? That's good. Nice knowing.
It's reduced. It's reduced gluttony because you didn't have the waffle.
Yeah, yes, that's right. Sonny, by the way, if you hear of where, if you find out where I left my pancreas, I'd appreciate that. Okay. That is all the time we are giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments, tweet us at Victorino Mattis at Sonny Bunch. Again, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Just type in Subbeacon under podcasts. We're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
Running a little bit long here.
Yeah, that's a long one.
We talked for a long time.
That was unexpected.
About a documentary that we all hated. Nobody...
Well, that's a compelling story.
I wouldn't say hate it. I just didn't really enjoy it.
Yes. Okay.
I have one Theranos story.
Please.
Which is that very early on in the Theranos media blitz... Richard Starr came to me and was like, "What do you think of this?" And I said, "Huh, it's kind of interesting." And so I reached out to a couple doctor friends of mine and said, "What's the deal?" And they had not heard of Theranos. And they said, "Well, we'll look into it." And like a week later, they came back and they said, "Yeah, this is all bull. And this, it's a scam. It can't work." And I said, what do you mean? And they said, you just can't. So if you can run like a bunch of tests, right, every time you do that, you need to mix some of the sampled blood with some reagent. And to do that, you destroy the sample blood, and you actually need a reasonably large version of it to get a reaction that's measurable. There simply isn't enough blood. You need more blood, and this is capillary blood, not venous blood. Like, this is ridiculous. And so I was like, "Huh, interesting." And then I went and like reread one of, I think it was the Fortune article. And when I did, I was struck by how all of the people connected to it were not science people.
Yep.
It's like George. And I thought to myself, what the hell is Jim Mattis doing? Why is George Shultz and Sam Nunn wrapped up in this? This doesn't make any sense. And so I was, I would say reasonably early, convinced that this thing was going to flame out like this. But what I never expected was that it would be such fraud top to bottom where, again, as I said, nobody connected with it even believed theoretically that what they were said they were doing is possible.
Right.
Well, I mean, I would disagree with that insofar as I would be shocked if like Kissinger and Murdoch and Mattis and the rest thought that what they were being pitched was nonsense.
Right. I'm sorry. I meant people working at the company.
Yeah, I got you.
Science people working at the company. Yeah. And the only people who thought it was possible were people who are so out of their depth that they have no, they're just illiterate.
It's the thing I would sign up for in a second. Be like, "Yeah, here's some money."
That sounds amazing. But
that's,
I mean,
amazing.
No, think about the Stanford professor who gave up his tenure to work for her.
Yeah.
But the best character, if you want to do the reverse, wait, Tyler Schultz there at the top in terms of
Tyler
favorite
Schultz
people from
the number two is the doc from the medical
Phyllis,
school.
Dr. Phyllis, I forget her last name, Gardner. Fantastic.
There's a great moment where the best found footage is one where Elizabeth Holmes is explaining how, you know, I mean, part of the what you have to do is you have to explain to people that, yes, a 19-year-old does know what she's talking about. Just This is synecdoche for the entire problem with your garbage generation.
Nah, I'm sure it'll be fine.